Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Today's podcast, we're doing another in the season preview series of podcasts. And today we're going to be covering the Memphis Grizzlies. And to talk all things Memphis Grizzlies, I'm joined by a writer from CBSSports.com and the editor emeritus of Hardwood Paroxysm, Matt Moore. Matt, how are you going?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for joining me to talk Memphis Grizzlies, a team in which you have you're well versed in all the comings and goings for this team throughout the many seasons gone and this coming off season. And they're a team who didn't make a huge amount of change. But do you think that the moves that they made them better this season?
Well, yeah, I think the biggest thing is that they didn't lose Marc Gasol. Obviously, losing Marc Gasol would have completely ruined the franchise. I talked to somebody the other day that said that was the doomsday scenario for them internally. They talked about that and they just did not see any sort of way that they were going to be able to compete down the line or this season if they hadn't kept Marc Gasol. So keeping him was a pretty big deal. They did have Brandon Wright, who, you know, is a very capable center and I think, you know, in certain situations can have a couple of big nights. I think that he's got a lot of potential to be a very good center for this team. I think Kosta Kupas, who they lost, was probably a better one, but they knew they were going to lose him. They knew they were going to be priced out. And getting Brandon Wright on the deal that they got him on, I thought was a real steal for them. I think it's really about internal improvement. They have some young players that they're hoping to take a step forward this season. And that's really probably going to say more about what happens with them this season than anything.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, whether you thought that the move from Wright to Kufos was an upgrade. The contract definitely is. And Wright showed that last season in stretches, he's never a guy that's going to be able to take on big minutes for big stretches, but he can come in and play small amounts, 18 minutes, 20 minutes, and be really efficient, score at a high efficiency rate, and grab rebounds, be a sort of an energy big man. And I think that's going to be key for them. It's not like Marc Gasol's got a history of injuries. He had that knee problem, but to come in and be that backup, that reliable guy, it's going to be, I think it's, they obviously needed to replace Kufos, and Wright was basically as good as any other option that was out there. The other guy that they got coming across in the offseason was Matt Barnes. After a couple of trades, he found his way to Charlotte and then he's ended up in Memphis. What do you make of the Matt Barnes addition for this team? He had some really good stretches for the Clippers last season. He got hot at times, hitting a lot of threes, playing some really good defense. How does he fit in this wing rotation in Memphis?
You know, I think from a fantasy perspective, he could be a very solid rotation player for a team. I think, you know, for Memphis, they really needed somebody who could defend on the perimeter and shoot threes. Essentially what they need Jeff Green to do, but Jeff Green they know is too inconsistent, and they saw an opportunity there to get him. You know, Barnes really impressed me last year. I thought last year was the best year of his career. He was very reliable from three-point range. He was shooting over 40% for a long stretch of the season last year before tailing off right at the end. And really in that first-round series versus the Spurs, he made a huge differential. So I think that there's a very good fit there. I think that Barnes does a lot of what they're looking for. He obviously fits with the culture in that he's going to cause a lot of fights and kind to he won't back down from anybody. He's going to get up in people's faces. He'll fit in with the culture there. I think that it's all going to come down to whether or not he can reliably hit shots in key situations. Because one thing we have seen throughout the years is the way to beat the Clippers was basically to double team Paul, to double team Griffin, and to make your rotations in such that Matt Barnes had to beat you. And Barnes was never able to do that because Barnes simply isn't a lockdown, knockdown, JJ Redick type shooter. If he can get that level just for a few stretches with Memphis, he's going to make them a lot better. I think he definitely, it's an improvement given what they gave up for him. I think I don't necessarily know if it's going to necessarily make any sort of huge jump in the West, but it is a nice addition for them, and it helps solidify the three spot a little bit. It causes some problems though with the wing rotation, which is getting really cramped right now.
Yeah, well, that's before I get into that wing rotation, because that is definitely something that we need to pay attention to. You mentioned that how hot he got in terms of his shooting last year. After the All-Star break, he made over 2 3-pointers a game, 2.2 threes a game in his 30 minutes, Matt Barnes. And that's a significant contribution for any fantasy team. And obviously it was key for the Clippers as well. And that was that time when Blake Griffin was out. He stepped up. He's not Blake Griffin, but he did step up and did what he needed to do and provided that outside shooting. And Memphis is a team that we know over the past few seasons has been right down the bottom in terms of three-pointers attempted, three-point percentage, three-pointers made, all that sort of stuff. So adding a guy who can get out there and can get hot and can contribute from deep, it might just be that little change in the way that they play that might have a big impact in terms of how they go. So I think Barnes is going to have a pretty significant role. But we talk about the wing rotation, Matt. You got Matt Barnes there. There's Tony Allen. There's Jeff Green. There's Courtney Lee. And there's Vince Carter. How does it all play out? Who do you think is the starting two and three?
I think it's probably going to be Courtney Lee and Barnes. And that's going to cause trouble because when Tony Allen doesn't start, he's unhappy. And that tends to make the entire team unhappy. When Tony's not happy, nobody's happy. The better option would be for Lee and Allen to start together and then bring Barnes off the bench. And that's not necessarily based off of talent. I think Barnes is a better player overall than Allen based off of the offensive limitations that Allen has. However, it's more a matter of Barnes gives you more versatility in terms of size and those types of things. There's a lot of areas in which Barnes would be a better starter, but I still think the key for them should be maintaining that chemistry. And I think that's kind of the thing that they have to manage. I think Jeff Green, we know, is a backup now. He's a backup three stretch four. I think they're probably going to go with a lot of stretch four this season as they wait for Jarnell Stokes to kind of come along. I think that there's a good chance that Allen and Barnes see a lot of time together, but they need this shooting, I think, of Courtney Lee. So I expect him to maintain the spot in the rotation. So if I had to guess, I'm probably going to say it's going to be Courtney Lee and Matt Barnes, but I wouldn't necessarily count on Barnes as a starter full time. And even if he is the starter, Allen's going to get a lot of minutes. So all of those guys are not going to be great fantasy options just from the perspective of there's a lot of those guys, and there's a couple of players, like you mentioned, Vince Carter. There's a guy that I think is probably going to get a bigger role this season, Jordan Adams. These are all guys that are going to take minutes and chip away at that rotation. It's a very crowded lineup on the wing for Memphis.
Yeah, definitely. And Jordan Adams is a guy that I was clamoring for them to get some minutes into last season just to see what he could do, because I thought he was quite impressive in last year's Summer League. He was impressive in this year's Summer League. And he's a guy who can go out there and provide that shooting from deep, which these guys, Tony Allen obviously can't do. Jeff Green struggled with at times. I would love to see Adams get a bigger role. But onto those main sort of four guys, I can't see any of them getting, or maybe Courtney Lee gets 30 minutes, but Barnes, Green, Tony Allen, I don't think any of those guys really approach 30 minutes a night, and that's going to hamper their fantasy value significantly, such that I don't think that Green or Barnes have any place in most standard leagues. Courtney Lee is right on the border, and Tony Allen, only for his ability to get, basically two steals a game, even if he plays 20 to 25 minutes, he can get those numbers and shoot a pretty high field goal percentage, even though he's a pretty terrible shooter. He converts at a high rate. He doesn't do much else. He's a specialist that gets you steals, but the minutes there it's going to be hard to judge exactly how it's going to all work out. Now, let's talk about the young guys on this team, because they've got they've got about five guys who've been drafted in the last couple of seasons. To me, Adams is the pick of that bunch. Would you have it that way, or do you think that someone like Jarnell Stokes is probably a better prospect than Adams?
No, it's Adams. It's definitely Adams. I mean, he's got the talent. He's put in the work. For him, the struggle is going to be on the defensive end. On teams like Memphis, when you're a contending team, it's very hard for a coach to justify putting a rookie or a young player or a second-year or even third-year player into the rotation and getting him heavy minutes based off of the fact that you give up a lot in terms of basketball. The knowledge base simply isn't there. You don't have as much contextual experience. And without that, coaches worry about you making critical mistakes at key junctures. So there's a good chance that Jaeger, even though Adams is going to give them something that they desperately need, which is shooting. Because I wrote about this in our offseason preview for CBSSports.com. Adams is one of the few players that's willing to shoot threes. Yep. A lot of those guys are looking for perfect open 100% quality shots, and you can't always get those. Adams is willing to shoot, and they really need to encourage that, because that's going to open up everything on the interior for Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol and keep those double teams out of there, which once those teams start doubling inside, it really screws with their entire offensive flow. So Adams can play a very big role there. He's just unlikely to get those minutes because he's got to earn them, and he's in such a tight rotation. Who are you going to take minutes away from? Like Tony Allen, first team all defense, Matt Barnes, a guy that can knock down threes and has been a part of a really high caliber team with the Clippers, who's long and athletic. Jeff Green has been in this league and has had nights when he's led the team in scoring back in Boston. Or Courtney Lee, who's really been the most solid, all-around, consistent contributor for Memphis on the wing since he arrived. So it's going to be very difficult for Adams to get those minutes. However, if there's an injury, Adams might be a smart pickup just from the perspective of there's a good chance that he gets an opportunity, he can make the most of it based off his ability to simply get buckets.
Yeah, well, last season, in his rookie season, he hit 40% of his three-pointers, which is huge because rookies don't hit high percentages. Like, he only shot 41% from the field, but to hit 40% from three with guys transitioning from the shorter college line out to the NBA line is very impressive. Now, he only did it on basically one attempt a game, and he only played 30 games and 8 minutes a game, so it's not a huge sample size, but it's definitely encouraging, especially when a guy comes into a situation with a reputation as a good long-range shooter, and then for him to back it up in his rookie year, it's very encouraging. But to me, the way the Grizzlies' wing rotation, it sort of feels a bit like the Celtics in their front court, is there's all these guys who are no one's a star, but everyone's really solid, and they all have their roles, but we don't really know how to distribute the minutes correctly, and it makes it really difficult for fantasy point of view. What about, there's a couple of young big men on this team. We've got John L. Stokes, who we mentioned. There's Jarrell Martin, who suffered a foot injury, and we don't know, we may not even see him this season. Have you heard any further on Jarrell Martin as to if we anticipate him back February, March, with that broken foot that he suffered, well, maybe a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I would not expect to see Martin this year, because even if he manages to get back healthy, and even if he manages to get back healthy and get in conditioning shape, he's going to be trying to earn minutes at a time of the year in which Memphis is probably going to be pushing for playoff rotation. Yep. They're probably going to be pushing for playoff, for which seed they're going to be at. And by that time, you know, their rotation will be pretty solidly established. And Jaeger's not going to go 10, like 11, 12 deep. He'll keep it at a 10-man rotation. So I just don't see him getting many minutes. Stokes is interesting in that if Zebo has any sort of injury, or if they have nights when they shut him down, which they really need to. They played him way too many minutes last year late in the season because of Mike Conley's injury. They felt like they needed the scoring, and they ran him into the ground a little bit. You know, Stokes can really come in and contribute. However, Memphis has a bad history of having guys that have a lot of potential and a lot of talent and yet not being able to get minutes because of their inexperience and simply never really panning out, because Memphis has got so many good players and they just don't see enough to warrant keeping them around. I mean, the list goes on and on of guys that they've drafted that simply disappeared. So Stokes, I think, is very much on the line here in that I've loved everything I've seen from Jarrell Stokes. I think that if he gets a chance, he's going to be a massive rebounder from a fantasy perspective. You know, late in the year, if there's any sort of injury situation, you might consider, you know, grabbing and stashing Stokes to see what he does, just because he's got a nose for the ball. He's very aggressive. He's tough. He's physical. If he can contain his fouls and manage to keep his defense good enough to somehow stay in the rotation, I think Stokes has a lot of value from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, I really like Stokes as well for that rebounding prowess that he does show. Now, at times last year, and there were games when Randolph missed and they would start Jermichael Green at power forward, do you think that Stokes has got the upper hand over him? Because I've seen somewhere people talking and people writing that they like Green as a better prospect than Stokes. I tend to disagree with that, but I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on comparing those two guys.
You know, I like Stokes better as a prospect, but it's going to, you know, no matter how you play in summer league or how you play really last year, everything starts over for the young guys on September 28th. Like, that's when things start over again. And Stokes is going to have to show it in training camp. He's going to have to show it in preseason, and he's going to have to show it in whatever minutes he gets in during the game. And the margin of error for him is very slim. It mostly just comes down to whether or not he's a smart enough player to adapt the things that he needs to know, and whether Dave Jaeger finally learns a little bit that he's got to loosen up a little bit with how he treats his young players. I think Jaeger's an excellent coach, but he understandably is geared on winning games for this franchise. And so sometimes you have to have a long-term view and recognize, look, we need to get Stokes some minutes. I need to not have as tight of a leash. I think Jermichael Green could be very solid as well. I mean, he played very well and gave them good quality minutes. I think from a fantasy perspective, if Stokes were able to earn minutes, he'd have a higher potential. Stokes is very much a fill-in-the-gaps kind of guy versus Stokes, who could be more of a guy that comes in and actually puts up some numbers. So I think there's a slight differential there in what they can do. But it will be a battle. And the reality is that Stokes is going to have to earn his spot in whatever the rotation is starting in training camp. I will say that if word comes out early that he has not had a good training camp, stay as far away from as possible, because it will take him a long time to force his way back into the rotation if he slips out of it.
Yeah. Zach Randolph is sort of on the downside of his career. He's not finished by any means, but you know, the end is closer than the start of his career. Do you see that the Grizzlies see a guy like Stokes, a guy like Green, a guy like Jarrell Martin? Do you think that they see those guys as being maybe they're going to be the heir apparent, or they're not quite at that level, or it would take some sort of, you know, big change in their production for them to be considered? You know, this is the guy that we might be looking to start as our power forward in 2 to 3 years' time.
Yeah, that guy's not there. You know, I think that they like a lot of the guys that they have, but I would also bet, based off of who they have, who runs that team, as well as Robert Parrin, his general approach to running the team, I would probably guess that once Zach Randolph is gone, that team is probably going to want to transition to a stretch four situation. They're going to want more shooting. They're going to want to spread the floor. Once Z-Bo goes, Tony Allen will probably go with him. And when that happens, the Grizzlies are probably going to try and rotate and evolve to more of a refined offense, to more like something you see in Detroit with Stan Van Gundy, to more like something that we saw with the Warriors, not necessarily with the backcourt shooting. But, you know, Gasol gives them the ability to play in so many different ways, in that he's so good defensively, so good offensively, and such a gifted passer that you can do a lot with Gasol and you don't necessarily need to have another big guy next to him. They'll ride this grit grind era as long as possible, but I don't think either any of those guys that you listed are ever going to be a starter for Memphis. If they are, it's because Memphis has swung out on trying to get a replacement stretch four type player. But that, I think, is probably more the direction that they're going to head.
Yep. As much as I like a guy like Stokes, he doesn't really scream starter potential. A couple of other young guards on this team that they've drafted in the last couple of years, Russ Smith and Andrew Harrison. Do you see anything from either of those guys, any sort of glimmer of potential that they're going to have, even as much as a six-man role in the coming seasons?
Watch out for Russ Smith. I think Russ Smith is a guy that might wind up taking the backup point guard from Mike Conley. Conley's had a lot of injuries in the last couple of years. Bane Udry's gotten solid minutes. And while they like Bane, and I think Bane does a lot for this team, and I actually love watching him play, I think there's a very good chance that Russ Smith comes in and actually is able to take that backup point guard spot. And he's a guy that's produced a little bit when he's been given the opportunity. So I would keep an eye on Russ Smith, definitely.
Yeah, any hope for Harrison, or not much chance of him really succeeding?
I'm not even sure he's going to make, well, they're at 14, so I bet he makes roster.
Yep.
Coming out of camp, unless somebody really impresses, but I don't think he's a lock necessarily to even make roster coming out of camp. I would stay away from Harrison as far as possible.
Yeah, I agree that Russ Smith is the better prospect there. Now, Matt, when we're doing all these season preview podcasts, I like to have a look at a player who might be a breakout candidate. Now, you can sort of frame that however you want, whether it's a player who goes from being a good, solid player into a great player, or from being a totally irrelevant player into a decent role player, or just someone you think is going to have that sort of something you could define as a breakout. Who do you look at on this roster as being that sort of guy who could take a big jump this year?
For me, it's Jordan Adams. You know, I think you look at Jordan Adams and what he's able to do. If he can get minutes, which is, you know, it's a challenge, but Memphis, we kind of know who they are, right? Like, you know what you're getting with Mike Conley. You know what you're getting with Marcus Salt. You know what you're getting with Zach Randolph. You know what you're getting with those wings that we talked about. Jordan Adams is the only unknown factor here. He's a guy that can come in and actually put up some points, can get up some shots. He's actually shown a little bit of a rebounding capacity, too. He could do a lot of things for this team. And so if he gets the opportunity, I think Adams can be a guy that makes a real impact, but he's going to have to earn it. I think it'd be one of those things where watch out for injuries, watch out for trades, watch out for how this team evolves. And if there's an opening there, Adams might be a smart pickup from the perspective of he can fill a lot of different things and do a lot of things. And that could help him earn minutes for a team that obviously needs you to play at a high level in order to earn minute time.
I had Adams as my guy as a breakout as well. For all those reasons that you mentioned, I just think that he provides something that they desperately do need across the wing. And he has shown significant potential, you know, pretty good athleticism. Do you think he plays more minutes than Vince Carter this year?
No, just because Jaeger is going to want to stick with the veterans, and that's just how it's going to be. If Carter shows that he's just done, like if it's just like very evident, if it's a Sean Marion type situation where, oh, well, it's Vince Carter, he'll still play, and then it's like, nope, he's just, it's over, then Adams, I think, slides into that role. But it's going to have to be one of those things where it's very clear that just Vince is done. Vince showed some things last year, and until he shows that he can't play anymore at all, I think he's got the edge just because of the experience factor and what he can give them.
The Vince Carter situation last year, I think a lot of people think that he might be done, but he had that injury to start off the season, which cost him a lot, and I don't think that's a fair representation of where Vince Carter is, because you know, 1 year before in Dallas, he was fantastic. He was rejuvenated, and then he suffered that injury, which cost him the start of the season. I don't think he's going to have really much fantasy value because he's only going to be playing limited minutes off the bench. He's not going to get close to 20 minutes a night, I wouldn't have thought. But veteran leadership, you know, just stability that he has there, and his knowledge of the game, I think, is really important. And he's probably a good guy to help teach Jordan Adams a thing or two as well of how to play the game. There's not many other guys around and who can have me share that sort of experience with Adams.
That him being a mentor is really his best value to the team. They've got him for that kind of. There's two sides of the Memphis locker room. Okay. So there's Mike and Mark, and they're kind of like the sane side, like the pretty calm side. And then the other side, you have Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, and they're like the grind, really like crazy intense side. And they balance each other very well. And Vince kind of falls on this side, and you got like Matt Barnes on the other. So it always kind of balances out between those two sides. And I think that Vince did have moments. I said last year this a lot. They have Vince Carter for the same reason they have Jeff Green. You don't necessarily have him to win, to take over games for you, to have big nights, or even to play consistently. You have him to win a few games during the regular season and one or two playoff games. And that's kind of why you have them around. And so, Vince isn't, with the way how crowded it is and how well Courtney Lee has played and how well Allen has played and how well Barnes projects, there's just not going to be a lot of minutes for these guys. And so I think if Vince does get minutes, he will split some of those with Jordan Adams, who they're going to want to see more. I think there will be a push to find out, is Jordan Adams somebody we want to keep, or is this guy expendable from us from a long-term perspective? They'll be very careful with that in terms of the situation that they find themselves in. But even garbage time production, I think, is going to be compromised by them wanting to split those minutes between the two.
That's all really good points. And that wing rotation, the more you look at it, it just looks so crowded with, we're talking like six names there. They're going three deep at guys who, you can make a case that they could be playing 20 minutes a night. And it makes it really hard to really, separate the value in terms of fantasy. Now, when we're having a look at fantasy guys and in terms of their draft positions and trying to get some value there, I have a look at these Grizzly guys. I'm trying to find a guy who I consider a sleeper, and everyone seems to be going at probably a similar spot. Marc Gasol, I think, in a rotisserie league at pick 27 is really good value. In a head-to-head league, it's okay as well, but no one really stands out to me as being any sort of sleeper value. Is there anyone here, when you look at this roster, that you think, they're significantly undervalued from fantasy point of view?
I guess the closest I would come to is probably Brandon Wright.
Yep.
I think that you're probably going to see him play more minutes than we expect, because I think that they're going to get Gasol more rest this season. He really tailed off after the All-Star break, and they did not get him rest, and that had an impact. They need him rested in order to be able to produce in the playoffs. I think that there's also a good chance that they play more rotations. Jaeger slowly evolved last year to playing a little bit more with Kupas and Gasol together, and was always, it seemed like, pleasantly surprised that they didn't get murdered when that happened by playing so big. I think there's an opportunity there for Wright to play four and Gasol to play five together. So I think that Wright may get more minutes maybe than we expect. And in that capacity, with Mike Conley running the pick and roll with him, where he's obviously an excellent finisher, even though Conley doesn't really throw a lot of lobs because he's throwing to Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol, not exactly leapers. With Vince Carter, who's very good in pick and roll situations, with Courtney Lee, who's a really gifted passer, he's got some scoring potential. With Gasol drawing the double team, he can get the offensive putbacks on the other side. Obviously, his rebounding could use a step up, but there's a potential there, I think, with where he's getting to in his career. And I think he's going to get some blocks as well. He's a pretty talented defender. So I think Wright maybe is a guy that could wind up having more of an impact than people expect. Even if that's, that sleeper role is more of a, it's more than you expect, but it's not going to be necessarily terrific.
He's currently being drafted at pick 144. And I think in head-to-head leagues, the fact that he's able to go out there and shoot, mid to high 60s in field goal percentage, and there's probably three or four guys in the league that do that, that's real value for him as well. When you can, add a guy that's going to give you such a massive boost in field goal percentage, because you can't find those guys. There's no one that's going to be sitting on waiver wires that shoots at. Tyson Chandler's probably the number one guy. Rudy Gobert, DeAndre Jordan, these are all guys who are going to be picked in your drafts and owned in all leagues, and they're the guys who give this massive boost to field goal percentage. Whereas you can go out there, add Brandon Wright, get yourself over a block a game, and then get a huge, huge bump in field goal percentage. That makes him valuable in head-to-head leagues. Yeah, the points aren't going to be huge. You're not going to get any assists or minimal steals. Rebounding will be solid, but it's a big bump in one category and then a pretty solid bump in the blocks as well. And that's going to make him really valuable. The interesting thing, Matt, we've been talking about this, the wing rotation, is that Tony Allen's being drafted at pick 139. Jeff Green at 135, Courtney Lee at 141, and Matt Barnes at 142. So people drafting in fantasy leagues don't really know how to separate these guys either.
Right.
They're just saying, we're just, yeah, one person's picking one, someone's picking the other, and we're going to see how it pans out. And that's fine. At the end of a draft, just pick a guy. If it doesn't work out in the first 2 weeks and you go, oh, you know what? They're only giving Tony Allen 18 minutes or they're only giving Jeff Green 21 minutes. Just move him on. But if they decide we're going to go heavy on Courtney Lee and play him 32 minutes and play Matt Barnes 32 minutes and you've picked them late, then it ends up working out. But the odd one to me in terms of average draft position for a guy who I think is overvalued, for some reason, Vince Carter's being picked at 129. So that's ahead of Green, Lee, Allen, Barnes. I don't have no idea why anyone's picking Vince Carter in standard leagues at 129. It makes no sense to me. I've got him ranked outside the top 300. That feels like it's just a lot of super hardcore Vince Carter fans picking him there.
Yeah, I think that's name recognition. I think they know that's all that they're really getting there. I mean, it's pretty clear that he's not gonna be a big part of the rotation. He's going to get some minutes. He has a role on this team, but yeah, no, he should not be in the top 300 of any sort of rankings. All those guys are going to get more minutes. And you also have the factor that, you know, he got hurt last year and there's a capacity for that to happen again this year. And so I think he's an injury risk as well. Courtney Lee's had some injuries here and there, but you know, Tony Allen and Matt Barnes are pretty solid. Allen suffered a few injuries late in the year last year, but you know, I think Carter of all of the wing guys has the highest injury risk. So it really doesn't make sense for a guy that's not going to get big minutes and not going to put up big numbers and has an injury risk to be ranked that high.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I don't think we need to really pay too much attention to it unless you're just sitting in a draft and then you're looking at the list of players and it's coming up by average draft position. You see Vince Carter there, just skip him and move to someone else because it's going to be a very, very low percentage of that coming to any sort of fruition at all. Matt, we have a look at guys, a player who's limited by their playing time. Is there anyone on this team that you think that if they were in a 30 to 35 minute a night role becomes, you know, a real fantasy star, whether that be, you know, Jordan Adams, who we spoke about before, or if Brendan Wright got the starting job, or if Jonell Stokes got a big starting role for a big chunk? Who do you think is the best sort of player that if they are, all they're limited by is their minutes in terms of what they're going to be able to produce?
If this team went in the toilet and traded everyone, if they had like a chemical blow up and they had to trade everybody and all of a sudden they're a lottery squad, which would be terrible because I think they traded all of their picks for the next 4 years. Jarnell Stokes is the guy that I would go with. I think that he's going to be a per 36 machine just in terms of,
I agree with that.
You know, his problems on the court are not production. It's about knowledge based defense. It's about attention to detail. It's about controlling fouls. It's about not making mistakes. It's about not turning the ball over, but he's got very good touch around the rim. He's got a little bit of a jump shot that he can go to, and he's got an insane nose for the ball. He's got great understanding of how to rebound. He's also a badass. He's just not challenged by anybody. He's going to go at absolutely anybody on the court. And so I think that he would be a guy that, given 35 minutes a night, would put up absolutely massive numbers for a team that would win like 17 games. It just so happens that that would have to be the situation in order for him to get those minutes. But, you know, he's another guy that if, let's say, Brendan Wright gets injured or Jeff Green gets traded and Brendan Wright gets injured, if there's a situation in which they just are like, we have to put Stokes into a bigger role, Stokes is going to produce. It may not necessarily, his net rating on off may be terrible. You know, the actual result of the team when he's on the floor may be bad because he's a young player still learning how to do all that. But production wise, I don't see any situation where Jarnell Stokes goes out there and doesn't put up points and rebounds and a couple of blocks because he is just a guy that hustles so hard. It's learning how to channel that effort into quality basketball. It's always a challenge, but he's definitely a guy I could see putting up really solid numbers given more minutes.
Well, you talked about him being a sort of a per 36 machine. He didn't play much down the stretch last year. In the last 2 months, he played three games, but on a per 36 minute basis, he averaged in those three games 23 points, 12.5 rebounds, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. Now, that is clearly not sustainable, but there's pretty much nobody in the league who's able to put up those sort of numbers on a per 36-minute basis, even in such limited minutes. He played, you know, averaged 13 minutes a game in those three games, but he just racks up stats at an exceptionally high rate. And even if you said he moved into that first big man off the bench role and played 20 minutes, that'd be enough to roster him in most leagues, because you're going to be approaching, he'd approach 8-9 rebounds. He'd approach, you know, 1 to 1.5 blocks. He'd get you points. He'd get steals. He is really aggressive. He's the guy I had written down for that section as well. And Russ Smith was another one I had down there as well. I think that if for some reason he was in a place where he was playing 30 minutes, we know what he could do in terms of scoring. I think he'd put up stats in a number of categories. I think he'd be a really interesting guy, but a lot's going to have to go right or wrong if you're a Grizzlies fan for that to really be the case. I want to talk about Courtney Lee for a little bit. He's coming into a contract season. He started off last season really red hot in terms of his shooting. It was just amazing. He was shooting above 50% from three, I think, for a big stretch to start off last season. He cooled off. Do you see any motivation for Lee playing for a bigger contract that's going to enable him to get that shooting back or get more involved in the offense, or any sort of growth from Courtney Lee? Or at this stage, he is who he is?
He is who he is, in that he's going to have nights where he looks phenomenal. Not even nights. He's going to have months where he looks just absolutely incredible. And he's going to have months where you question, why is he on this team? Why isn't somebody else playing? It's just, he is, it's not even so much inconsistent. It's just that Courtney's a streak shooter, and he just has natural peaks and valleys to his game. I wouldn't even necessarily say that he's inconsistent, because his play, in terms of if you watch him and his decision making and his approach to the game and his effort level, is always very consistent. It's just that sometimes a shot falls and sometimes it doesn't. And it's really nothing more than that's just, you know, how, what kind of a shooter he is. There's some kind of times it's not necessarily that guy's fault. It's just how he's programmed. You know, Lee is always going to be, he's going to be crafty. He's going to get to the rim at certain points. He's going to make steals. He's going to get out on the perimeter. He's going to be he will always have a very solid role on this team. And he's able to run pick and roll pretty effectively. There's a lot of things that he can do for the squad. It's one of the reasons I think he's really pivotal to their success. But he's also just naturally going to have those slumps. He's kind of the flip side of Jeff Green. Whereas Jeff Green more often disappoints you than not, Lee, you're more often satisfied with what he does. So he's not necessarily going to get any better. I don't see him playing for contract. I think that he is the kind of guy that's just simply going to go out there and say, I'm not going to risk my team's success by gunning for points by trying to boost my own value. He's always going to look for quality shots. He's always going to knock them down at a pretty decent rate overall, but we'll have nights where he just can't hit anything. He is a guy that suffers sometimes when he's not hitting shots. His confidence does tend to drop. If you notice that he is in a slump, maybe think about taking him out of a starting lineup in various leagues, just because if he's in a slump, it takes him a long time to get out of it, because his confidence does get affected by whatever's happening at the moment.
But when he gets hot, it stays for, you know, games and weeks at a time. And we saw that he was just shooting at one stage. I think he had the highest effective field goal percentage in the NBA for the first week or 2 weeks of last season, because he was hitting basically everything. You know, his free throws, his three pointers, every shot he was taking was pretty much going in. He's also seems to me to be the king in the NBA of the last second unguarded layup at the basket. I don't know anyone who seems to be able to get as wide open on those plays. I've seen, you know, two or three times that he's been able to do that. Last season, that game against the Kings, even go back to his time in Orlando. For some reason, his name just sticks in my head whenever I think of those lobs from the inbounds pass to an unguarded guy at the rim. For some reason, that's always Courtney Lee to me.
He's a phenomenal backdoor cutter. I mean, he is a really smart, crafty backdoor cutter in terms of being able to, because he's got that 3-point threat. So guys are always overplaying to his catching hand in the corner, and he is just he's live, so he's able to slip right around him and get to the rim. He is I love Courtney Lee's game. I love Courtney Lee as a person. He's one of my favorite guys on this team. I also accept the fact that he's not going to be a guy that every single night is going to be reliable for you. He's not JJ Redick, but there are also things that Courtney Lee does better. So there's real value for him for this team, but there's also a lot of problems with him in terms of, I think, from a fantasy production night after night throughout the course of a year.
Another guard on this team who is going to be a free agent at the end of the season, and that's Mike Conley. He suffered numerous injuries. Obviously, the injuries to him in the playoffs were a huge factor in terms of whether the Grizzlies could actually end up challenging the Warriors and taking the series further when he had those facial fractures. He only played 70 games last season. The last couple of years, we've seen his numbers decrease. He dropped his assist numbers down to under 5.5. He'd been at 6 for at least 6 in the previous 4 seasons. His steal rate has dropped as well. He's been getting, he had a stretch where he was at basically 2 steals a game for 3 years in a row at least, down to 1.3 last season. I'm a massive fan of Mike Conley. I think he's one of the better point guards in the NBA, but his numbers have been decreasing. What do you attribute that to?
I would probably say that a lot of it comes down to how they've learned to use Mark more, honestly. If you notice, they use Marc Gasol in a pinch post. I mean, we're talking 2 out of 3 plays. They're running Mark out of the pinch post. And that's usually, you know, for a lot of teams, that's just setting up the offense and getting everybody into the right spacing and using some, you know, some off-ball screens in order to free guys up. But Mark's such a gifted passer that a lot of the times when he gets the ball, he's able to deliver a strike to guys cutting to the rim. And that, I think, changes a little bit of the dynamic. I think part of it is that they've actually gotten backup point guards. For a long time, this team did not have backup point guards. There was simply nobody. And Conley played absurd amounts of minutes through long stretches of his career because they simply didn't have anybody behind him. But they brought in Beno Udrih. They brought in Nick Calathes, who's now gone. And so they did not have the kind of need to play him as heavy minutes. And that, I think, kind of got him out of the rhythm a little bit. And the offense just changes. And with them adding guys like Courtney Lee, who's able to create on ball, they also just didn't have guys that create on ball for a long period of time. It was just Tony Allen. That's not a good plan for anyone.
No.
So, you know, I think all those things kind of chip away at his production. He also doesn't necessarily, he's not shopping for assists. He's not a guy that's really looking for those kind of things. He's very much, to me, he is a game manager in the best sense of the term, in that he runs the offense, he makes sure things are going well, and he also helps to spread the floor because he's such a good shooter, and he's a guy that they can keep out there consistently with his defense. So I can see his numbers dipping. I would not be surprised if those numbers went back up this season, especially with him being in a contract year. I wouldn't be shocked if he had a real bounce back year from a production standpoint.
In terms of the minutes, you're right. His minutes dropped. He was down under 32 last year, whereas previously he'd been at 34, 35, 35, 35. So, yeah, it might not seem much when you're talking raw numbers, but a drop of 3 minutes is significant. Like that can attribute to the drop of half assist in a game. That can be attributed to the drop of, you know, 1.5 points a game less. You know, the steals dropped by 0.2, and all those things happen in an extra 2 or 3 minutes, and that drops him down by maybe 5-10 spots in fantasy rankings. I still think he's a fantastic fantasy point guard as well. 3-pointers, steals, solid points, nice assists, rebounds, doesn't hurt your percentage. In fact, he's an awesome free throw shooter. He hit 86% of his attempts last year, which is a really, really high number. I really like what Mike Conley does from a fantasy point of view, but also just watching him, I think he's a really... He's underrated by some. A lot of people do love him, but I would love to see him get an all-star berth. It's going to be hard for him in the West, but I do think that Mike Conley is a upper echelon point guard, and he's going to get paid. He's probably the best free agent heading into next year's class at this point, you know, excluding guys like, you know, LeBron on those one-year deals. Would you agree with that?
He's definitely up there. He'll be one of the names they talk about the most. I think that I always go back to this, which is Team USA has so many great point guards available. You know, Steph Curry, yep. Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, all these guys are available. And yet Team USA year after year has told Mike Conley, we really want you to come to Vegas for the summer. We really want you on Team USA Select. We really want you on in camp with us, because they know what he does and what he brings from a chemistry perspective, from a leadership perspective, and how much of an example he sets. You know, Mike's a guy that works hard every single night. He puts in the work, puts in the time. He doesn't complain. He doesn't force things. And he just does things, everything the right way. You really can't ask for a better guy that's not a superstar than Mike Conley. He is like the epitome of what you would want from a guy in that role.
He just seems like a really good guy as well. Without meeting him or without knowing him, he just seems like he's a really down-to-earth sort of great teammate. And to me, this whole Grizzlies team is a team that when you look at it, they feel like they're one of the best sort of chemistry teams in the NBA. Now, you'd know more about that than what I would, but it seems like they all actually mesh well together, and they've built a really successful chemistry, and that's a big part of their success, I think.
there's a real love, I think, between a lot of these guys. They get tired of each other, particularly last year. They got really sick of each other. Like just were around each other a lot, and there were some problems with various players who were no longer there from a chemistry perspective. But I mean, the relationship between Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol is excellent. Mike and Mark are really close. It's why I never really worried about Marc Gasol leaving, because he's so close with Mike Conley. It's why I'm not worried about Mike Conley leaving next summer, because he's so close with Mark and with Zebo. Tony Allen is a guy that they all trust and respect, and they get along. Courtney Lee has, I think, ingrained himself into that culture as well. You know, you talked about how good of a guy Mike is. I wrote that his extension back in 2010 was, I labeled it franchise suicide.
Okay.
That's how bad I thought it was. I said he was the worst starting point guard in the NBA at that point. I could not believe that they had given him that kind of money. That did not work out so great. So, like, 3 years later, when he was like an all-star caliber player, I reached out to Memphis PR when they were coming to Denver, where I live, and I was like, hey, I'd like to do a post where I apologize to Mike Conley for calling him the worst point guard in the NBA. And a lot of guys would not have done it. And Mike not only agreed to it, but when I sat down with him, he wasn't smug. He wasn't like, he didn't make fun of me. He wasn't acerbic. Mike was like, a lot of the things that you wrote were right. He's like, I read the column. He's like, you were right on a lot of areas. I did need to improve. He's like, the fact that you're willing to say you were wrong is great, but I know that I needed to improve. He's like, I'm just fortunate that I was able to put the work in and that I did. And like, since then, Mike and I have been like on awesome terms. He's one of my favorite people in the league. He's an absolutely just great guy, and he is a phenomenal point guard.
But what you said at the time, he had not performed up to standard at all before that contract. And it's always something that I always go back and reference when you hear of people getting big contracts. Like the one that comes to my mind was when Utah gave the extension to Alec Burks last season. Burks hasn't proven anything. But then you go back and go, you know what? Memphis gave Mike Conley the extension because they saw something in him and saw the way he was working. Then it makes me put a little bit more faith in some of these organizations that maybe they're seeing something. Maybe they're banking on future production. The way that Memphis did, and they said, we think that Conley is going to get better. We think he's going to work hard at it. And it paid off for them. And now that he's, you know, one of the more underrated point guards or underpaid point guards in the NBA, because they got in early and banked on him working really hard to improve the deficits in his game. And it worked out fantastically for them and for him as well.
And I think the point guards in particular, I talked to him a little bit about this at the time when I talked to him. And, you know, it takes, realistically, I was trying to remember this, it takes 4 to 5 years for most guys to learn how to play point guard in the NBA.
Yep.
Just with timing and defense, how to understand the pick and roll, how to make the right read, how to control tempo. All of these things take a lot of time. It's not only is it such a crucial position with where the game is at in terms of the pick and roll being so important, but obviously with the amount of talent that there is at that position, it's an exceptionally high level as well. It's something to keep in mind when you look at guys like Emmanuel Mudiay, who projects as like a rookie of the year type player. It's something to remember that if he doesn't have that shooting component, it may take him a while to really figure out how to play. Now, he shows a lot of instinctive understanding of making reads, particularly with under the basket, kicking out to the corner shooter and plays like that. But, you know, Conley's a good example of, you can have all the talent and the athleticism in the world, but it's going to take time at the point guard spot for you to learn how to understand the game itself at that level.
You can almost extend that to any rookie, really, because the way I feel that things are heading in the NBA is that there's so much talent in the league at the moment that guys coming in, they're not coming into a situation where, you know, there's the odd example, but there's not many guys who come in and go, I am now the best player on a team as a rookie, because there's just so many guys who have been waiting 2 years to get their opportunity, and then they become the man, and then the rookies have to bide their time, and we're very quick to, you know, get all super excited for a rookie to come in, and then equally as quick to go, this guy's garbage, this guy's useless. But then, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time, they become superstars. Jimmy Butler barely saw the court as a rookie. And, you know, you could have looked at it and go, oh, he was pick 30. Yeah, no wonder he was pick 30. He was useless. He was garbage. He didn't do anything. And then 3 years later, he's an all-star. He's a max contract guy. He's averaging 20 points a game, and he's basically the best player on the Bulls now. And we need to just remember that these guys are, they're young, they're coming in as kids, and that they do have to learn a lot, and it's very complex. And just think of guys playing point guard. Okay, they've got to do what they've got to do, but then they've got to face off up against Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, and they're the guys that are coming at them that they've got to try and learn how to deal with as well. So they've got a lot on their plate to come in as a 19, 20-year-old and in a professional environment, dealing with money, dealing with the rigors of a long season, and then dealing with these sort of things on the court. Is a stack to learn.
Yeah, and, you know, like Butler was a guy that I thought Tony Snell was going to beat out for his job. That's how much I did not have any sort of – because, you know, Butler was coming off of that toe turf injury, which I hadn't really factored in that he had that turf toe. I was like – when I found out he had turf toe, I was like, oh, no, all of my projections are wrong, because that's what held him back last year. And, yeah, you know, just sometimes it takes guys some time. Now, you can get – it gets risky when you start to assume that just because they're young they're going to get better. You know, there's guys like JaVale McGee. There's guys like Andre Barnyan. There's guys that obviously have just simply not cashed in. O.J. Mayo is another example of a guy who showed a lot of promise his rookie year and just never followed through with the kind of attitude. That's the thing is, you know, I'm really numbers-centric, and I really trust all the metrics and those type of things. But and even the scouting potential in terms of seeing what they physically can do and can't do on the court. But I have learned, like, there really is a mental component, and I dare to say this word, but like a spirit component. How do you approach the game? How much do you love it? Andrew Bynum could have been one of the most dominant players of his generation. The guy simply did not care. He just did not give a damn. And so that, I think, was why he didn't work out. You can talk about the knee injuries. You can work past knee injuries if you're willing to put the rehab time in. That was always a question with him as well, is the kind of effort that he gave into rehabbing from injury. So there is a component that simply comes down to what's upstairs. And some guys have it and some guys don't. And that's okay, because I probably don't have it. So, you know, that's why I'm not an NBA player.
Exactly. Who's your favorite player on this team, Matt?
Marc Gasol, no question. Yeah. There is nobody. Marc is my second favorite player of all time in the NBA. He is... Okay. His ability to pass, the kind of passes he makes, he's so ingenuitive with his passing. His fadeaway jumper is something that I'm always begging him to go to more, because he's got such a good one that he doesn't trust. I love his running hook. I love how excited he gets on made baskets. I interviewed him and Zebo together in 2013, and I was going to sit down, and it was going to be an argument for why Marc Gasol should win Defensive Player of the Year. Marc refused to talk about anything except like his team and his teammates. He just will not take any sort of credit for himself. And the fact that, you know, he came back to this team, and really I've heard that there was never any question. Multiple people have told me this from inside Memphis. There was never any question that he was coming back. They knew a few days after the season ended for them versus the Warriors back in May that he was coming back. He never screwed with them. He never asked for a lot. He also wears this gigantic, big, black trench coat everywhere that he goes in the winter. And when you see a 7-foot dude with his beard wearing a black trench coat, it's one of the most terrifying things that you will ever see. But he is just he's a phenomenal player. He's a lot of fun to watch. I love his approach to the game. I love how smart he is. He is unquestionably my favorite player.
Well, I think the thing that stands out to me about Marc Gasol, he's my favorite player on this team as well. As much as I love Conley, Gasol is the guy. But you go out there and you see NBA teams running pick and rolls, and the standard way, the center rolling to the basket, the guard, you know, setting him up, dishing it over the top, whatever. But with the Grizzlies, Gasol's the guy running it. You know, he can go out there and he runs it. He can hit the guy, the other player, Zebo, rolling to the basket. He can bring the ball up the court in transition. He can do everything in a body that big. It's phenomenal. His distribution skills, his mastering of the defense positioning and offensive positioning, he can do it all. He is just, he's fun to watch, but he's also really, I can't think of the right word. It's when you watch it, it makes you think about what he's doing, and everything that you see him do, you go, this guy's put a lot of thought into what he's doing, and he's doing it for a reason. And it makes you think that, you know, he is positioning himself for this reason. At this particular time, it's nothing's happening by chance, I think is what I'm trying to get. He is planning everything out that he's doing on the court, and it takes a lot of brain power to do that sort of stuff.
Pretty rare in the NBA that you find a player that his biggest weakness is that he always wants to make the right play to the expense that he won't take shots he sometimes should, because he understands that they're low percentage shots and he'll always want to make the right play. That's his, that's the biggest liability of Marc Gasol, is that he too often wants to make the right play. And that's a pretty phenomenal thing to be your weak point.
Now, given that Marc Gasol is your second favorite player in the NBA, who is your first favorite?
Of all time, it's Marc Gasol currently. Of all time, it's Alonzo Mourning.
Okay.
I grew up, Zoe was the first player that I really attached to when I was growing up watching basketball. His intensity on the defensive end, his ability to challenge shots, the passion that he played with. I loved it. Like, he was a one-handed dunker as a big man. I love those kind of guys. They'll just reach up and jam it in. The fact that he just screamed in everyone's face, I loved it. He was a really smart player. He was gifted. I've always kind of rooted for the underdog, so I love the fact that he was kind of always playing second fiddle to Shaq. I love those, and his ability to make a difference on the defensive end was something that really resonated with me at an early age. So Zoe is my absolute favorite. In the NBA, currently, Mark's my favorite. My second favorite is Dwayne Wade. Even now, with where he's at, he has those nights when there's nobody I love watching more than Wade, when he's slicing the basket, hitting floaters, and just absolutely running the entire building. He is phenomenal to watch. And to me, there's no question that Wade's the third best shooting guard of all time.
Yeah, I think that's pretty hard to argue that. I was going to ask you who your favorite all-time player for this team is, but if Marc Gasol is your second favorite player of all time in the NBA, then it's got to be him as your favorite all-time player for the Grizzlies. The guy that I was going to throw out as my guy was Sharif Abdul-Rahim back nice. from the Vancouver days. He was just fantastic. He would go out there, he'd score, he'd get rebounds, he'd provide defensive presence. He was just a fun guy to watch on a team that was trying to build its identity in Vancouver. He was one of the shining lights on that team. He had 5 straight seasons of averaging 20 points, or 6 if you include the season where he averaged 19.9. Big rebounding numbers. He averaged a 20-10 in one season. He was just a very, very good player, and a very good player for Vancouver in those early days. So he was the guy. If I had to choose someone, it would be Gasol, but Abdul-Rahim is the other guy from their history that I was a big fan of.
My second favorite Memphis Grizzly is probably actually Shane Battier.
Okay.
Yep. People forget this because Battier only played 1 year in Memphis before going to Miami, but everything that's happened with the Grizzlies in terms of the grit grind era does not happen if they don't get Shane Battier. Because Battier hit the crucial 3-pointer late in the first round series versus the Spurs early on that gave them, I think that was their first franchise playoff win. They'd always been swept, and he gave them that shot that he knocked down, I think in game 1 or 2, was the first franchise win for them. And then he made just a series of huge plays. He was phenomenal in that series and really helped them. So, Battier was one of the early Grizzlies in Memphis, and he's had a lot of attachments to that city. And Shane's also one of my favorite interviews I've ever talked to. I talked to him a lot during his finals years in Miami. And such a smart player, obviously, but also a really good guy that cares about the game and cares about people. So Shane Battier is probably my second favorite Grizzly all time.
He's also one of those rare players that averaged his most points per game in his rookie season. He averaged 14.5 points in his rookie season, and then only just got over 10 points twice, when he averaged 10.1 twice in the 05-06 and 06-07. So he had his best scoring season as a rookie, and it was and his best basically overall production season as a rookie, and then it was downhill. But he was never a real sort of big stat sort of guy. What he meant to a team was a lot different to just the numbers that were put up on a box score.
Yeah, not an awesome fantasy player by any means, but a lot of fun to watch.
No, exactly. He wasn't going up there and getting your big 10 blocks and 5 steals and 20 rebounds. He's never doing anything like that. He was just really solid. And again, like Marc Gasol, in the sense that he was just a very smart guy, and we all hear him interviewed, and we know how intelligent he is, but he's basketball intelligent as well. Being in the right spot, playing defense the right way, shutting guys down when needed to, providing the offensive outlet guy, the 3-point shots when necessary, doing it all at the right time. And he's been a key player for so many teams in that role, that whatever role they needed him to play, basically. Matt, I think we're done with the Grizzlies. Anything you wanted to add about this team before we go?
They should be, I think from a fantasy perspective, they're going to be limited because I think, again, their offense is probably, they were 12th in offensive efficiency last year through the season, and they were actually second for the first half of the season up until about mid-January, they were an excellent offensive team. I think from a fantasy perspective, you know what you're going to get. I think that's the nice thing about them is that you're not going to be necessarily, unless you put unrealistic expectations on them, you're not going to be frustrated with what they give you because you have to understand what they're going to do. And so I think they have real value there. I think they're probably going to be a good team this year. Barring injury, they'll be a high playoff seed. They should challenge in the Western Conference, probably fall short. But they'll be very good again. And I just appreciate you having me on, man. I love the podcast, and thanks so much for having me.
No problem. It's been awesome having you on, Matt, and thanks for everything that you've done with Hardwood Paroxysm. And it's obviously fantastic to be over there now and having my podcast on the site and doing some writing there. It's awesome. And if you're not following Matt on Twitter, I'm sure you are. It's his Twitter handle is HP Basketball. So go ahead and follow him on Twitter. And Matt, I'm sure you'll engage everyone on Twitter and get into some Twitter fights in the coming weeks.
Of course, as the season gets closer, it's time for me to renew the worst thing about me, which is how much I like to screw with people.
So, if you're looking for a Twitter fight, go ahead and engage with Matt because there'll definitely be some of those coming up. I think that's it for today's podcast. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and leaving a review for this podcast on iTunes and checking out all the other podcasts at the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcast Center. Check out the Over and Back podcast, the Biscast Ball. I can never say that one correctly. There's a new Timberwolves one that's gone up there, the Heat Check podcast. Go ahead and check out all those Hardwood Paroxysm podcasts. Leave reviews for all of those on their respective iTunes stores and help us all increase in the iTunes rankings. It's always really, really important to help build up listenership. And I thank everybody who has done that so far. It has been fantastic. Matt, once again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been greatly appreciated.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.